Ladies and gentlemen, broadcasting live from the McPherson Center in downtown Kitchener, 570 News now presents The Jeff Allen Show. Filling in for Jeff, here's Gary Doyle.
It is 9:33. This is a subject that rears its head on occasion. Euthanasia, assisted suicide. It's not a user-friendly kind of. It's not something anybody ever really wants to discuss. But here's the thing: the province of Quebec is beginning a provincial consultation process on legalizing euthanasia. Now, they start this process next week. The Institute of Marriage and Family Canada has released a study paper on this. They released it yesterday for consideration in the areas of legalized assisted suicide or euthanasia, whatever you label you care to put on this. The analyst who put the report together is Derek Miedema, and he joins us now on the phone lines. Good to talk to you again, Derek.
Good to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
You called the paper dead too soon. Kind of a giveaway there as to the contents, I think. Why is this such a touchy subject, do you think, Derek?
Well, it's a touchy subject because death itself is... death itself is such a traumatic experience for everyone, and it's a touchy subject because we have issues of control, of quality of life, of perceived dignity, of all sorts of issues coalesce around this issue.
And one of the big issues for me, and thankfully I've never had to face this in my own life, is at any time, we're talking about in this particular case like somebody who severed a spinal cord. Well, now here you've got the issue of quality of life is going to be the first thing you think about, but the emotions, like how do you separate your emotional feeling and set that aside?
Well, I would say that emotional feelings are part and parcel of quality of life, and from my own experience, although this isn't part of the report, setting aside emotions, we basically need to, when our emotions work their way to the surface, we need to deal with them as they come, as part of the process of regaining a sense of being happy to be alive.
And that's the tricky part for anybody that's had a spine. Well, maybe for me the best example, and I don't know if I changed my mind or not, maybe it just helped me focus, but watching the dignity and watching the effort of the late actor Christopher Reeve, watching the way he tried to rise above his spinal cord injury and try to make something positive out of that, man, that told me that there's a quality of life issue. Here's a guy that's just not going to quit.
No, and Christopher Reeve is one of many examples that show that people with spinal cord injuries can and do regain a high quality of life. And one of the reasons I looked at this, one of the studies I looked at initially showed that it was a survey of emergency room staff, and it showed that just under 2 out of 10 emergency staff felt that if they had a spinal cord injury afterwards, they would have no quality of life. They compared that to a group of people with spinal cord injuries, and just over 9 out of 10 of those people with spinal cord injuries said they did have a high quality of life. So there's a big disconnect between how people without a traumatic injury like this perceive they could live with such an injury and how those with such an injury perceive they are actually living.
One of the statements you make in here, which I find quite interesting, is people with a spinal cord injury are happier with their family life than the general population.
Mm-hmm. And this was part of a study that I found that on a number of social areas, people with spinal cord injuries viewed their family life as they had a greater satisfaction, a greater quality of life with respect to their families than did people in the general population. And that was the one area, one social area, where the difference between how the general population rated their quality of life with respect to their family, that's the one area where people with spinal cord injury rated it significantly higher.
I find that a phenomenal statement. I really do, because, and maybe because I'm not on that side of it. You know what I mean? Like, it takes a life-changing injury to have a better quality relationship with your family?
Well, I don't know the ins and outs of the individuals that were part of that survey, but I can only imagine that when a traumatic injury like that takes place, it takes out a whole lot of issues that may cloud relationships. It may bring up others that cloud them, but it is, as I say, I can't explain that necessarily, but I wonder if it's a possibility that, having a spinal cord injury means that we have to live with day-to-day life and that we don't necessarily put aside issues that have gotten between us in the past, but that those issues pale in comparison with the need to live day-to-day.
So what I think the danger here, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, is being able-bodied, like say you've had a spinal cord injury and I haven't, and I'm trying to help you make decisions. I'm transposing what I think is a quality of life issue onto you and not taking into consideration what your thoughts are. I'm just saying, this got to suck for this guy. That's my perception of your injuries. Is that fair?
Well, and that is a fair statement, and it's a matter of not imposing our view of quality of life on people with spinal cord injuries, because people with such an injury can have a quality of life that they themselves rate as being very high. And so to impose our view on of quality of life on them, to impose our view on how worthwhile their life is, there's a great disconnect between, as you say, how a person without such an injury views quality of life and how a person with such an injury views it.
And there has to be an adjustment period.
Oh, absolutely. And the research didn't show that there was a concrete adjustment period that was the same for everybody, in the sense that we can't say based on the research that someone that the average person with a spinal cord injury takes X number of years before they regain a high quality of life. But we know it takes time, because in one of the papers I looked at found that clinicians working in rehabilitation facilities for people with spinal cord injury, across the board, they find out that initially people with spinal cord injuries want to die, but that desire eventually is overcome. And so it's a temporary desire. It's a temporary desire right after the injury, but given the time to heal, given time with family, given interacting with people who affirm their dignity as a human being, given time to work through adjusting to this radically new normal, that can result in having a higher quality of life once again.
So what's the message to the Quebec government? Because the timing obviously is not incidental.
Well, the timing is not incidental, but it's also true that I started working on this paper in November. So it's not like we released this just to address only the Quebec situation. But my desire for this paper is, if this is an aspect of the debate that hasn't been looked at, I would be very pleased if this paper would get into the hands it needs to, so that it can be part of the discussion, because this situation, I think, can also be more broadly applied in terms of most anyone who goes through a traumatic experience in life may have an initial desire to die, and after having time to recover and after having time to adjust to a new normal again, so to speak, that they can realize that there is again joy in being alive. So it has a broader application than just spinal cord injury, but this is a situation where I think most people, I would have the same reaction, where most people on first glance would say this person can't have a good quality of life, therefore if euthanasia or assisted suicide is legal, we should offer it to them. And the reality is, since people with spinal cord injury can and do regain a high quality of life, to give them the option of assisted suicide or euthanasia soon after their injury is in reality to rob them of the chance to regain that.
Well, I've gotten to know a young man who has been in a wheelchair his entire life. I'm going to say he's late 20s now, maybe early 30s. I don't know his exact age. He got married last year. He's got a successful career. And I remember chatting with him one afternoon about, being in a wheelchair, if he thought it was confining. And he said to me, "How would I know? Like, this is my life. I'm making the best of it. Isn't that what you're supposed to do, make the best of it?" It was a real eye-opener for me.
Well, and I think there are many lessons we can learn And the one lesson that I learned and that we can learn as a result of this paper is just that again, to look at someone and define them by a wheelchair and I'm not saying you define that person by the wheelchair, but I'm just taking that to the larger issue. If we look at someone and define them by being in a wheelchair or using a cane or anything, we miss looking at them as a person, looking at them as a person as a whole, and letting them tell us about how much they enjoy being alive.
Mm. Well put. Derek, thank you. I appreciate the work you did on this, and I appreciate you weighing in on it today. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
By Derek Miedema from the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. His research paper is called Dead Too Soon. And it's about quality of life. People that have spinal cord injuries was his focus.